Shadows. The world seemed darker when he said it. Every man who walks the earth casts a shadow on the world. Some are thin and weak, others long and dark. Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones podcast. Founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chump, we decided it was time to rebrand and relaunch just in time for the game to do the same with its second edition. Tune in each week for your dose of strategy, discussion, jokes, and good old geek culture. Be sure to check www.whitebookpodcast.com for more content, generally in written form. Huge thanks go out to George R.R. Martin for creating this world, FFG for a great game, all of our contributors, and you, the listeners. Contact us on this site, facebook.com, as well as Twitter, or email contact@whitebookpodcast.com. This Creative Commons music is Townfish by Spinners. All right, dear listeners, welcome back to another segment of episode 250 of the White Book slash formerly known as Two Champs and a Chump. I feel like we need a cool little symbol, kind of like Prince, you know? Wouldn't that be sweet?
Wouldn't be anybody? Pretty sweet. Anybody? Yeah.
Okay, good.
I'm with you, Will.
We have a 20-year-old. Isn't that our cute little symbol?
Oh!
That's cute.
Welcome to my co-hosts from actually halfway representing Team Right and Team Left. I guess we're Team Center this week. Patrick and Aaron.
We're Team Right.
We're Team Olenna. We're clearly Team Olenna.
Team Olenna. What if we could be Team Littlefinger? I've really wanted to be Littlefinger for a long time now.
But left and rank flank Olenna.
Yeah, Will, I think we have to wait till we restructure the teams and come up with new names for you to be Littlefinger.
Yeah, okay. we'll Littlefinger embarrass it next time.
Exactly. Oh, that'll be great. Oh, I'm looking forward to that. Listeners, be prepared for next quarter.
Nice.
Okay, but, I mean, along with these gentlemen, for this particular segment, which I think is going to be a fun segment, but we'll delve into that. We also have a guest host. And John, why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself if they're not familiar with you already.
Not just John. Banter Behind the Thrones, very own John Wright.
They own him?
I need to check. Last time I looked, I was tied for the most episode listens on an episode. Not that I'm like checking weekly or anything like that. But I'm a ratings boost, guys.
We could use it. I'll take it.
So I'm John Wright out in San Diego. And I do some writing for Will and Luke on the White Book. And I've been playing this game for a couple of years now.
Wow, that was quite humble.
I'm really, really boring too.
Yeah, no, I want to thank you for the writing for geez, everybody that's been contributing to the site from here on out. I'm just really pumped about how the kind of magazine
thanks for picking it up because you're reliable and the rest of us suck.
I definitely suck.
Too true.
I suck hard.
Too true.
Like every week I get or every other week I get a message from Luke that's like, "Hey, you got an article?" And I'm like, yeah, man, sending it to you right now.
Just put in a Google reminder, man. It's that easy.
Yeah. But Luke is my Google reminder.
Yeah, I cannot prop Luke hard enough for all the work that goes into his editing and coordinating. Like, the site would not be what it is without him. So, that's phenomenal.
It's true.
He's been incredible, yeah. For sure.
Especially because he was totally a random guy who messaged us on the White Book on the white book messages. And we were like, yeah, sure. You want to do a bunch of work?
Yeah, I thought that was phenomenal. And then suddenly he was like, oh, yeah, by the way, I played in the CCG. I played Casey Galvin at Origins before he was a world champion when I was like 14. And I'm like, what? What the hell are you talking about? Why have I not met you before?
Apparently, he was pretty solid in the CCG when he was like 12.
Yeah, that takes talent, you know?
I don't know. As usual, the Gen Con, like, young teenagers are pretty solid players.
Yeah, man, noobs are really taking it over. Like, even here in Missouri, we've got a kid named Gabe who, long story short, we invited to hang out with us at the dive bar after our normal Thrones night on Saturday. And while there, he's like, yeah, man, I'm excited. I get to go to graduation next week and whatever. Turns out it's his high school graduation. So that was fun. But dude took third at our regional and was in the top cut at store championships. Though I forget his placement. So coming on strong.
I mean,
I feel threatened.
Yeah, we had a recent high school graduate win our most recent big New York tournament, and it was just awkward for everyone.
You couldn't buy him all the drinks you wanted to, huh?
He doesn't even drink.
What a weirdo.
Technically, probably because it's not legal.
No, that's not a problem in New York. I mean, that's
says
totally
the
a problem
school
in New
teacher.
York. Yeah, I corrected myself in the middle of that. All right, let's talk podcast stuff.
Someday this podcast is going to be played at a parent-teacher conference, and it's going to be embarrassing for you, Aaron.
It's going to cost Aaron his job, almost certainly.
This is not the one that's going to be played at a parent-teacher conference.
Yeah, you're right. It'll be Second Sons. Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
Second Sons. Thankfully, I caught the real big stuff.
Yeah, it has me on video drinking every week.
Oh, yep. My. We're delving in as part of episode 250, which I think is going to be split into a couple chunks. Hope you enjoy the interview with Mike Hurley from FFG/Asmodee North America. But this week, with those of us here, I think we're going to be chatting a little bit on a topic that we've been kicking around for a while that I know Aaron is super excited to delve into, and that is a kind of a retrospective on the first cycle of the LCG and how we were wrong and how we were right. So how'd you want to break that up, Aaron?
So we each picked 5 cards that we thought were good that ended up being terrible, or that we thought were terrible that ended up being really good and playable. And then we picked 2 cards that we were actually right about, where, like, there might have been some qualms amongst the meta, or the meta might have thought this card's going to be amazing, and we disagreed. So we picked 5 that we were wrong and 2 that we were right each, and we're going to discuss them.
Sounds good. Especially good because I am way more tipsy than usual. So, cheers.
Cheers.
I vote that you go first, Patrick.
Well, alrighty. Sure,
I say
why not?
Go for it.
Yes.
Good. All right. Do you want me to just do my wrong cards, and then we'll all do our wrong cards, and then do our right cards?
I would say
that makes a lot.
Go ahead.
Does that make sense? Does that make sense to everybody?
Do all of yours, and then we'll kind of debate them.
Yeah, do one at a time, and then we can debate them and be like, "That was on my list," and then we can cut things out and not repeat ourselves.
Or do we want to just go around in a circle? I don't care either way.
That's fine by me to do all of yours and kind of debate them as a whole.
Sure. All right. My first one that I was wrong about was Gregor Clegane. I thought that he was kind of a bad card when he first came out. I thought he was going to be really easily controllable and only really good in like some sort of janky combo deck. But he's a really good like one of in basically every Lannister deck that I built. So I was definitely wrong there.
Yeah, he was on my list, although I made extra cards because I assumed we'd overlap. Yeah.
Gregor was also on. Are we discussing the reasons why right now, or letting you read all of four?
No, let's just discuss them.
Let's discuss them. I thought he was going to have all those problems. I still think he gets worse as time passes because a lot of his power is creating dead dupes. But he's it was underestimated even by me. I've run three to the Sword and Lannister forever, just how powerful Lannister's military is and how much he does to push that forward.
Yeah, I agree.
I think we all just underestimated how powerful control was going to be in 2.0, I think, as well, at least at this time. So, I mean, when he came out, everyone said, oh, it's just really easy to kneel him, take his icon, etc., and it won't be a problem. And that's harder to do consistently than we thought it was going to be. So he's a lot better than we thought it was going to be.
Will.
You know, one thing that I think kind of hit a lot of us as 1.0 veterans, we were so used to kind of having a spread of a lot of uniques at one, maybe two copies tops. And I think a lot of us expected the 2.0 card pool to expand on the unique front a lot faster than it really did, which would assumably drop Gregor's power level by kind of smoothing out the duplicate issue. But it really didn't. A lot of people are still running triplicates of those power uniques. And so his power level has stayed higher through the end of the cycle than I think a lot of us expected.
Yeah, and the cost curve we play with is very clumpy right now, too. There's not really a middle curve in a lot of things. The ones and twos and the six and sevens for a lot of decks, which makes him more likely, again, to hit stuff on the drudge.
I mean, FFG is actively pushing us against the middle of the curve with cards like Ward and First Snow. You need low costers because you have to set up, and you need high costers because they're not hit by these powerful effects that are going to cost you games. So, by design, I think Gregor is more powerful than we thought.
Which, I don't know that I'm super in favor. I mean, the more I think about it, the more, if there's any true, NPE card in the environment, negative play experience as it's defined, I really think Gregor is probably it. When his ability goes off and sometimes just wrecks a game, it's not really strictly based on a play choice on my behalf or a good play on my opponent's behalf. It's just random luck of the draw, and I really dislike that the more the game goes on.
Yeah, it's fair.
I think it's less prominent as the game goes on, because if you are killing an important five or even seven coster, when those are one and two ofs instead of three ofs that the whole deck is built around, it's hopefully less dominant.
We'll see when the game gets.
Yep, I agree. So moving on to my next card. My next card is Winterfell Crypt. I thought that card was going to be a defining piece of the Stark decks for the foreseeable future. And in reality, I really haven't played it very much myself. I started playing it in a couple decks at first, but then I kind of started to cut it down to two of or maybe one of. And now sometimes I'll just leave it out entirely because there are times when it's just not that impactful for me. Anybody else?
I figured some would have it, but I left it off because I said I didn't like it much on Second Sons, and Buzz looked at me like I grew a second head. So some people are getting some success out of it, although I am also cutting it from my decks at this point.
I'm kind of with Aaron. I considered it, but didn't put it on my list in the end. I think maybe it's just because there's too many pieces, moving pieces to that Stark deck. It's kind of a combo Shaga sort of thing. The people haven't quite nailed is my best thought right now.
Yeah, that's definitely, definitely fair.
It's a setup card, which you think would be a lot better, but that's basically what it is. It's for setup.
Yeah.
In a weird way, it requires you to run a lot of extra Hodor and Sansa, and I don't think you really want to do that as a general rule, because then if you don't see Jon Snow, you're probably going to have some dead cards.
Yeah, I definitely think that's an issue. Is that you really need a sacrifice engine if you want to be using your big characters to shuffle one of their guys back into their deck. And it's kind of I think another problem with it is that it's not a very good emergency ripcord kind of thing. Like with, you know, Gaston out of Martell, you can pop it and send all of their renowned power back to their hand right away. But with the crypt, you have to wait till the end of the phase. So if they're about to win, your crypt isn't going to do anything to stop their renown.
Or their Miri trigger, or, you know,
yep.
Or their, what's her name trigger, Tain trigger. All those will still go off.
Yep, definitely.
Next card?
Next card. Alright, so my next card was Pulling the Strings, the Tyrell Loyal plot. I thought that plot was going to be really good. And then I put in a couple decks, and I realized that I was really just waiting for my opponent to pivot plot, generally either summons or building orders, and I was just figured I might as well just play that myself and have one less gold, but a guaranteed trigger off of this plot, because oftentimes when I was, you know, sitting around waiting for them to play something, they wouldn't even have it in their deck, or they wouldn't play it at the right time for me, and all around the plot just really fell flat for me.
I think that's maybe a general issue with Tyrell kind of falling flat. Like, somehow they just don't have that final, like, punch that they need that other factions have. So that's actually another one that I had considered for my list, though I didn't pick it.
I didn't like it, so I was right about it.
God, I feel like this whole segment is just so Aaron can brag about being right. And when it gets to his list, he's going to be like, I wasn't wrong about anything. You guys all suck. And
that's the worst. We can't let Aaron get off with that.
I'll go next. But no, I agree with the first two. I just didn't like Pulling the Strings, as the record will show since I reviewed it. John, what do you think about Pulling the Strings?
Yeah, I mean, this was a plot that kind of existed in 1.0 and was awful. And you had to copy an active plot that was out, I think. Yeah. But because of that, I was never really excited about it either. But you don't have any recorders saying that anywhere, so I won't brag too much.
Well, I'm just a Tyrell optimist. Every time a Tyrell card comes out, I'm like, maybe this will be the one.
You and me both.
So speaking of Tyrell cards, my next card is Marin Heat. I really loved this card when it first came out. I was like all about it. I was like, guys, this card's amazing. It's going in a bunch of decks. And I don't think I've built a deck in the last 3 months that has played Marin Heat. It just ended up being too expensive and not impactful enough on the board to actually merit the slot.
Dang. I was right there with you. That was another one on my short list that didn't quite make the cut for my final list. I agree. It was really big when that pack came out, and then the meta kind of left it behind. I think partly because so many negative attachments that we got this cycle pushed attachment hate to really high level.
Yep.
I loved that card. I was so excited for Marin Heat. I think I gave it like an A- or a B+ or something silly. And it's just, I think a lot of what chased it out of the meta was Syrio. Like, it came out basically the same time as Syrio, and then every house had that really easy access to double stealth.
Right, or First Snow. First Snow is what pushed out of the meta.
Yeah,
you can't set on the Arbor Knights.
Yep, definitely that too.
That'll be good one day.
Yeah, I do think so.
No, we'll see. I think they'll just be better cards by the time it's good.
I think it's the kind of card that Valor makes better. Like, you get it back to hand, and then you just stick it on another knight, and you're like, and
yeah, but do you? Like, on your... If they're the one Valoring, maybe, but if you're Valoring, you have, I mean, we don't know the stat line, but probably like 2 or 3 gold for your Valor turn. Are you really going to blow that on a Marin Heat?
That's with the Arbors.
Yeah. if you're running Tyrell and Valor, you should probably be building an Arbor deck.
But, sure. Well, we'll see. We shall see. And my last card, my fifth card, was Here to Serve, the Maester plot. Yeah, I rated that really highly. I thought, you know, it was just coming off of Worlds when we reviewed Taking the Black, so first edition was still fresh in my mind. And I was like, At the Gates was in like a bunch of decks towards the end of first edition. This plot's basically identical. Probably will see some play. But it just really falls flat for me consistently. Like, sometimes it's cool to go pull your Maester out, but I've really never seen it, like, actually, like, super hard impact a game. And most of the time, I'd rather just have enough economy to play out more people than I could with the plot or some other big plot effect. Now, I will say, if we slash when we get more Macers, I will probably be wrong about my being wrong about this card because it will probably get good at some point.
It's another one that First Snow kind of killed, right? Like, you can get a Maester that's three or less, and then you have three gold, so you're probably playing your character that's three or less. And then they First Snow, and you're like, well, that was a waste of a plot. Now I have six gold in my hand.
Yep. Yeah, that's definitely an issue.
And there's just not enough Maester quality right now, either.
Yeah,
especially when you look at something like, you know, Stark with Lewin, who is so dependent on other characters. Like, you know, there's really only, what, a couple houses that have Maesters that you really want to grab? Night's Watch and, I guess, Martell?
Baratheon. They like getting Kristen.
Yeah, I can see that. But that one is a much more situational.
Definitely. Although I will say, like, with Ward in the meta, I think Crescent becomes a lot more popular again.
Oh, agreed. Totally.
Lannister is never really against getting a repeatable draw card.
Yeah, I think Lannister would rather just dump out a big guy than go grab their chuddy little maester.
It's Lannister. They can still dump out a big guy.
if my recent reasonable experience, yeah, this big guy.
So what we need for this card is to have everyone vote for the green fort in November, and then this card will be very good.
Please don't vote for the green port. Do not make us have maesters as a thing. Vote for any of the others, not maesters.
Mainly blue.
Gotta be. Which one's blue?
Is blue the knight one? Because that's the one I'm voting for.
Yeah, it's totally knight.
Don't do that.
Knights all the way.
Knights are so boring.
Boring.
Yeah.
Get out of here. Armies are boring. We can all agree on that.
No,
I was going to vote armies, I think, because, like, we already have a bunch of knight tech, and I'm still traumatized from Maesters in First Edition. So, like, armies being good is a thing that makes sense.
Yeah, but, like, we have a lot of knight tech, but we don't really have a good knight deck. Like, there was that Tyrell Crossing that existed until we flipped First Snow.
Any Lannister deck is a knight deck, because it's running Gregor and Jaime, and then...
That's not true.
That's what that agenda will be, is just throw in all the good expensive around.
Right, exactly. You can actually build a knight deck. I mean, I wouldn't call a deck that runs good knights a knight deck. It's just a normal deck. I call a deck that runs knights every single deck, pretty much.
Right. Why do you want more of that? There's no Maester deck.
Because I want to build a deck that actually has, like, is built around knights. Most decks have at least one Maester, too. I mean, if you're playing Martell, Barra, Night's Watch, Lanny, you're definitely running at least one Maester. Right, Greyjoy?
Yeah, there you go. That's four or five out of the eight house.
Because, I mean, like, the problem with the Maester agenda, I think, is that if they print a Maester agenda, it means they also have to print a lot more Maesters. And that's a lot more room for us to get some crazy obnoxious stuff like we got in First Edition to try to make Maesters, like, good. Whereas we already have enough knights that if they just made the agenda, we could just play it. And they wouldn't need to make any broken knights to make it work.
See, that's the thing. I would rather have something new to play with than the same thing that's out there all over the place already.
I mean, the armies are at the moment semi-unplayable. Like, very few armies are being played. That's why I want it to be armies. I feel like armies is what have the least support, and therefore they would be the most interesting to try and design something around.
Well, I think maybe FFG left themselves in a weird spot on the cost curve and strength for armies versus their new push on unique characters. When you have 8 strength, like Rob's Hosts, versus, you know, however much strength Tywin winds up being at 7 cost. Like, I don't know. It's just a very weird ground.
So I guess I just got distracted eating a fortune cookie, and the fortune cookie told me to focus my attention. So I'm back.
Ooh, prizzy.
I'm getting sass from a fortune cookie.
I ate 2 hot dogs while we did that list, so totally fine.
I could use a hot dog. I've mostly just had beer today.
That's not a good diet, Will.
It is not, but it was delicious. If anyone out there has not had the chance to try it, MILF from Mother's Brewery here in Springfield, Missouri. 11%. I love it.
Wait, Mother? I always forget that Mother's, it's really good. Mother's milk is really good.
Yes, yeah. Mother's is great.
I get mine straight from Carla, but it's still delicious.
Oh,
gross.
That's not even a little bit true.
I get to hear the unedited episode. This is really fun.
Yeah.
Mother's milk beer is delicious, though.
Okay, so that was Patrick's list, right? Who's up next?
I'll go next, although I still have six cards left. I'll just delete one as I go. The first card is one that I failed, and I don't think I was the only one, but we all thought it was terrible, and it's really good, the Bone Way.
Hilariously, that's on my right list because I feel like I was the most positive out of our group when we reviewed that. But I do have to hedge that bet a little bit and say that I think it's turned out to be even better than I expected. So, I love
it. I was on the Bone Way train, too. I gave it a 3 out of 5 on CardGameDB, which I think was the highest rating that anybody gave it. It's
gross that you review cards for Scatrell. He's not on the episode this week, so I'm going to be mad at him again.
You guys don't let me on every week, so I got to go do three reviews somewhere else.
Yeah, trust me, I know that feeling.
Oh, man.
John, talk about your Martell card. Yeah, talk about your Martell card.
This isn't one of my Martell cards, actually. But it's good and Power Grab is good, but I don't love it like other people do. So I mean, when it goes off, it's gonna give you a big boost in that game. But yeah, so I like it because it's a Martell card, but it's not like one of my favorite Martell cards.
It's one of my favorites. I feel like, you know, we talked a lot about how second edition has really boosted the strength of the power challenge. And I think we kind of neglected how much this extra power grab shifts things and how much people have to take that calculation into effect once this is on the board. I mean, and it's on losing any challenge, attack or defense. That's quite the revenge effect.
Yeah, it's a really solid card. What's your next one, Aaron?
My next card is a card that I thought was going to go in every deck. It's still a good card, but it does not go in every deck. It's much more situational. Support of the People.
Yeah, I'm with you there. I thought that I gave that a 5 out of 5, and I was thinking, you know, like just about every deck is going to play it. And I think every deck played it for about a month. And then we all realized, like, it's good, but there are better cards out there in a lot of decks.
Yeah, I just found myself to not be winning power challenges in particular by 5. So I wound up having to pull it. So, you know, I agree with you. I win a lot of power challenge, but not by quite enough to justify it.
I think you still play it in Barra and Greyjoy for sure, but
Greyjoy and a Heartbeat.
I don't think it fits in Barra. I run it in Greyjoy, but that's the last place. Barra has too many good events.
Yeah, maybe.
Mr. Wright.
Yeah, this is one of the few I actually put on my Wright list because I played one game with this card and did not like it and took it out. And I've been telling Ryan Jones to take it out of his deck for like the last 6 months since then. So.
Yeah, but you didn't win Kubla.
No, I didn't go.
I mean, Ryan Jones will be on Second Sons this Saturday at 2:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Stop plugging other
that
content.
That is a really weird time for you guys.
Well, we had to do this week, so we couldn't do this night. And Buzz was like, I work all week. Stop making me be up till 4 in the morning. So we're like,
wait,
when's good
Buzz
for you?
Buzz has a job?
Buzz Aldrin, not Buzz Hannon.
Right. No, I know Buzz Hannon. I was amazed at Buzz Aldrin.
Yeah, no, he's just insane.
Yeah, he works for NASA. He was like
all right.
Wow, no, that was a very flat Buzz Aldrin joke.
Yeah.
I mean, I said it was baller.
Can you cut that, Will?
Where else do you go?
No, do not cut that.
Can you just cut it?
No, that stays.
That's the exact reason I don't try to make jokes. It just the risk is too high for the falling flat like that.
I mean, yeah. No one should make jokes for the next few weeks because Daryl was on the cast and we all just need to pour out some 40 and be like, no more humor on this cast.
I mean, no. That's like all. That's all I bring to the table.
Oh, okay.
The occasional humor. The occasional humor and a lightning rod of these young jokes.
You know, everyone has to have a towel.
What's your next card, Aaron?
The Arbor.
Dude, that was on mine.
I gave it an A. I loved it. So it's got a problem beyond the stupid duping roll, which I'd really appreciate if we could just skip. I think its biggest problem is that big gold advantage, the way it most helps you is as a giant tempo advantage. And in playing a 4-gold location, you're giving up so much tempo that it sort of goes against its own benefit.
I think that the biggest problem with the Arbor is Tyrell as a faction just being not strong enough right now. And I think once Tyrell gets good, the Arbor will be in that A range. And I'm sticking by my high rating of the Arbor. I'm still sad that it can't be duped immediately and that Greyjoy kind of eats you for breakfast if they find weed or not so. But I like it still.
I've got to say, Arbor was on my list of wrong cards as well. Partly for that reason of us not realizing how that limited ruling would interact with duping it. But in general, like, Tyrell has just not followed through with what we expected. They've gotten all the resources, kind of search and draw, which I think are still resource-related cards, but nothing quite there to give them that punch, nothing to spend that on, to search for. It's at that same level. Their 7 coster is another glorified resource card in the Queen of Thorns. And just doubling up on that along with the Arbor doesn't give you an additional advantage to close a game. And so this is one that I feel like the first cycle let us down, but hopefully cycle 2 will seal.
I'm just waiting for King Renly and praying that he's good. Hashtag the bomb that was promised.
The bomb that was promised.
You
I love
kids
him.
And your hashtags.
What do you think, John?
I think the Arbor is one of the cards that you kind of have to build your deck to take advantage of. Like you need to have something that's going to be able to push out higher cost curve guys to get your benefit from it. And it's really hard to do that with a card that's so unreliable to find at the same time. And if you don't get it early, you're just sunk in that deck. And the search we have for it is not enough to make it consistent. And I think that's a big part of what tanks Tyrell too at this point. Like they could be the faction running a bunch of 4 and 5 cost guys and playing them like they're 2 and 3 cost guys, and they just can't because the deck becomes too unreliable.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see if they get there during the second cycle.
Oh, Brett, my second total. Oops, sorry. I don't think so. I think Trell's going to be bad for everything. They're the new Baratheon from first edition, where like they're going to have bouts of being really good and then be super overpowered and then right back to terrible pretty quickly.
They need just some control. That's all Baratheon needed.
I mean, yeah, but like FFG is so uneven. They'll give like that control, but then they'll give like super overpowered control to try and catch them up and be like, shit, mistake, and print something that kills it. Like, don't you know the FFG way by now?
We'll see. They've been doing a really great job in second edition so far. I'm very happy with like 95% of the cards that we've gotten.
Except for all the kill, I mostly agree.
Sure.
Next card I was wrong about, Raiding Longship.
Did you say it was bad?
Do tell.
I didn't say it was bad. I thought it was mediocre and a trap instead of awesome. And what's the opposite of a trap? I don't know. Like a gift.
A solution.
Sure. It helps Greyjoy do so much of what they already want to do that it's a really, really good card, and it really plays hell with challenge math. It's stupid in banners, and it's just extra stupid with Balon. It's a really good card.
Yep. I was all about Raiding Longship.
Oh, now maybe we just did this so you could pretend you read about everything. Asshole.
I mean, I'm pretty okay with it.
Hostile. Hostile.
Very hostile. Don't you know me?
Anime. I do.
Yeah, you talk about like first edition post-traumatic stress, though. This was a card that, you know, I went through that boat save, and that was awful. And this is not that, at least.
It's definitely more balanced than the first edition one. I mean, the first edition one is like challenges didn't mean as much though, except for Longship Maiden's Bane deck, which we should probably not talk about. But like
yeah.
Like, it just didn't mean as much, so it didn't matter as much. Like, in second edition, since challenges matter more, the card is more effective on the board.
I remember the first time I remember watching you play, Aaron, you're playing that deck on a stream somewhere. I just remember that you looked so bored the whole time. It's like, nothing was happening in the game, just sitting there. It's like, you looked unhappy, your opponent looked unhappy.
I mean, I won. I played that through regional season last year specifically because I wanted that shit restricted into Oblivion. I didn't want to deal with it at Gen Con.
I, I lost my regional that day. Finally.
My deck won like 3 regionals. I just managed to not win with it.
I remember having a good laugh about that when I heard you talking on the cast about how you were just playing it to get it banned, and then somebody else playing your deck kept winning with it.
Yeah. It's fine. It got
I also definitely remember watching Tommy win a regional with it, because that was awesome. Like that was a terrible regional for me.
Tommy used my deck, so
yeah,
he's one of them.
He definitely was. Yeah.
That asshole. All right, last card. Someone else has anything to add about first edition and why I'm sad? Why I'm sad deep inside. The last is another shout out to SoCal. I never bet against my family.
Also on my.
Yeah, I thought it was going to be. I didn't think it was as bad as a lot of people, but I thought it wasn't good and wouldn't really see play. And it turns out all you have to do is be really weird like Lucas and figure out some shit, and you can make it work. If we were doing this with including Corset cards, Hear Me Roar would totally be on the list too. But those cards, that deck worked really well, and those cards are pretty much why. So, yeah, I never bet against my family.
Go for it.
Sure, I think that's like the most stable the meta has been through this first cycle too. Like the 2 months for that deck was just the deck too, and it was like one of the corner pieces of the Banff build.
I don't think that deck's gotten any worse. I think people just stopped playing it.
Sure.
Yeah, after having faced one, it's gotten worse either. I agree. I think we just underestimated expecting that we would need a broader range of uniques to hit with that rather than just going all in on the handful that we had currently. And it still pays off.
Yeah, I personally am still not a big fan of that card. I will admit that I may have been overzealous in how much I thought it was bad, but I still am not convinced that it's a good card. I played with that, the Banff deck in a regional. It really did not go well for me. It was the worst I've done in a tournament in second edition, I think. It still feels like it's a little too janky, and it's good because Lannister is super good, but I think a Lannister deck that doesn't play the Banff stuff is better than a Lannister deck that does.
I don't think that's true. And I think the stats bear out that that's not true. I think you just kind of suck with that deck for whatever reason.
Well, that's also definitely a possibility, but I still have not lost to that deck while playing Lanny Dragon, so I'm unconvinced that it's better than.
Better than that doesn't make it a bad deck.
I don't think, I don't think it's a bad deck. I just think that the card I Never Bet Against My Family does not make a Lannister deck better.
I think it can and probably does in certain cases, but agree to disagree.
Yeah, agree to disagree. It's still not one of my favorite cards. I'm probably just salty that I did so bad at that regional.
I mean, how bad?
Hello?
How bad?
Oh, worse than Luke.
Yeah, I did worse than Luke. I went like 3-3.
Well, betting 500 still sounds real good if it's baseball.
Yeah, it's true. Unfortunately, it's not baseball. I did beat Joe from Cincinnati, though. That was the most nervous I was all day. I was like, if I lose to Night's Watch Fealty, he will never let this go. And like, I will never be able to give him shit for playing Night's Watch again. So I'm very happy that I still managed to beat him.
Hey, Joe, look, someone else shit-talked you this time.
Oh, I shit-talk Joe all the time.
Yeah, me too. It's one of my favorite hobbies.
Yeah. It's great. Someday Night's Watch is going to be good and Joe's going to be really annoying about it.
I mean, Night's Watch is bad and he's really annoying about it, so.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Anything about InBamf, anyone?
Yeah, the thing that sort of confuses me about it is that the deck kind of went away right when the Stark Box came out. And it seems like when it should have like went into overdrive with the Tower of the Hand, and it didn't. And that's just an observation, I think, more than I don't know why that is, but it seems like it should be better than ever now with Tower of the Hand able to bounce some of those guys back in your hand after you pulled them out.
Yeah, I think the problem is it's just like too many pieces. That was definitely my problem with the deck at the regional. Like, I felt like if I didn't see either Tywin or a jumper event, and ideally both, I just was not even in the game. And I just like for 3 games in a row didn't see Tywin within the first 2 turns in any of the games, I think. And I couldn't find any of the jumper events, and then it just fell apart. So, but I think you need to make the deck that way if you're playing the jumper events, so it all kind of cycles back around to me not being a fan.
So I think there's an alternate way to build it now that might actually make that less damaging, but we'll get there later. A topic for another day. Let's do John next and say Will for last. Does that work?
Good with me.
Will, are you there?
Yeah. Sounds good.
Because if you weren't there, we should stop podcasting.
No, I'm definitely still here. Just trying to let some other people get a few words in. So since I've been kind of trying to jump on the first response.
Okay.
All right. Go for it, John.
Yeah. Well, let's take off I Never Bet Against My Family real quick. That was on my five. I just want to say real quick how much I appreciate how easy this is for me, because I can pretty much put down whatever I want because I'm not on record anywhere.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you. But so take my word on it, these are four cards that I thought I was wrong about, I guess. So my first one is Newly Made Lord, which I was actually really upset about when I saw it was coming out, because I thought giving that easy and disproportionate location control to like one faction was going to create an imbalance, and it turns out it didn't, because locations don't matter that much. But
it's very accurate.
Yeah. But that was a card I was unhappy to see so early in the game.
Man, I after having played it in this regional this last weekend and knocking out Gaston Grays at opportune times, I friggin' love it. If anything, I feel like we underrated it a little bit.
I think that it's a really meta-dependent card, and it really depends on what factions are on top at whatever event you're going to. Because I think it really hits Greyjoy, Bera, and occasionally Martell like really hard, but it super falls flat against Lannister. I know that for me personally, most of the Lannister decks I build nowadays have exactly zero Newly Made Lord eligible location. So he's basically just a 4/4 blank card. And
it's light against Lannister, but I think it hits Targaryen pretty hefty too. After having again played them, like they rely on the card advantage from Plaza of Punishment pretty heavily.
Sure. That's fair. But I mean, I don't know. Any card that can just completely fall flat like that is, I don't know, it makes me nervous to play too many of it. I still play him, definitely, but I don't know.
Okay, so to move on then to another card, Pleasure Barge. Pleasure Barge, again, coming from 1.0, I thought that draw was awesome and economy did not matter. And it turns out it's the other way around in 2.0, draw does not matter that much, and having gold available to you does. And so I thought Pleasure Barge is going to be great. I really look forward to playing Tyrell with all this crazy draw and seeing what that could do. And it's not that great.
Yep, I'm with you there.
I actually like the card. I don't think it's amazing, but I still think it's probably a 2 of in most decks, just as an event, really.
No, yeah, I agree. I meant I was with him there on Tyrell not being super good after they got it.
Yeah, I also like that all of our whole lists are just like Tyrell cards.
Yeah,
well, it's just like we just
thinking Tyrell was going to be good, and then Tyrell still not being good.
Yep.
Yeah, we expected them to get the punch, but they got all the like resources they needed to get to the punch, but didn't actually get that like knockout. And I guess I'm in the same boat. I didn't quite include it, but it was on my short list. It's phenomenal in conjunction with the Arbor, but what are you drawing into?
Hey, man, on the plus side, they got a hashtag and no one else did.
It's true. Nobody else has a hashtag, so.
We could make up a hashtag.
Who's the real winner is what you got to ask.
I think that's a great hashtag. Who's the real winner?
Hashtag who's the real winner.
Hashtag not Terrell.
Hashtag not Terrell. Hashtag wait for Renly. Hashtag the bomb that was from.
Hashtag it was Lannister.
You know Joe from Cincinnati is going to go make a Night's Watch hashtag like immediately, right?
Oh yeah. He already made it. He just like he felt that this was happening, and it's already.
There was a rumbling in his gut.
He's basically like Spider-Man if Spider-Man exclusively played Night's Watch.
My Night's Watch sense is tingling.
Yeah. He's gonna go like find a wall and just stand on top of it. He can't climb walls. He just stands on them.
I love it.
Hey, that pisses off him. Hey, Johnny, this could have been you as the Martell guy, but I know, you decided to play Baratheon.
You kept trying to make me the Martell Joe from Cincinnati, and like I'm just not.
No, you're not, because you played Baratheon. You ruined it.
I mean, I think eventually we're gonna have one guy for every faction. I think Aaron, you're already the Lannister guy.
Which, yeah,
Aaron's the Lannister guy. Wamma is the Tyrell guy. Joe's the Night's Watch guy.
Cameron's
Does
the Stark
mean
guy.
I've
Cameron's
not committed to a guy. Faction yet.
Lauren's the barrister gal. Barristan gal.
Barrister.
Wow, I did that well.
Is she a lawyer in England now? Is that what happened?
I was drinking water and bad at things. And I generally don't know how to talk.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's do another card. As I cover
Perfect.
So let's do a Martell card. And the one I've got that I was wrong about is the Bastard Daughter. Which I originally... I loved this card when it came out. I thought it was, you know, just going to be perfect filler, chud, you know, flame soak, and that it was going to be like exactly the kind of thing that Martell needed. And so now it's often like 90, 95% of the time does not go in my Martell deck just because, it turns out what Martell, what Martell needs is not like, Martell is fine losing challenges. They don't need any help doing that. Martell needs characters that can impact the board, and Bastard Daughter does not. And plus, with like the First Snow susceptibility, it's just not a very good card most of the time, I don't think.
Hey, what's the Martell new character that lets you ambush in Sandstorm?
Yes,
Harmanuller.
Who? Harmanuller.
Harmanuller
makes Bastard Daughters go back in my deck.
Yeah, me too.
I think Bastard Daughter has never left. That is like card number like 2 building Martell decks. That card advantage is still phenomenal.
We've been
finding out more and more as time goes on is that turns out hand control and intrigue and the like do still matter. I love that card.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. I still don't care about hand control and intrigue.
I think it really depends on the deck you're playing, but in a Martell Varus deck, I think Bastard Daughter still definitely has a place.
So my problem is Varus hits the board, and then they just don't mill that turn. And
right, you obviously have done this the turn before.
Yeah, I mean,
like setting it up. Oh, I'll play Varus and 2 Bastard Daughters, and it's like, well, yeah, no kidding, they're not going to swing at you. But the trick is to plan ahead, Aaron. I don't know if you're familiar with that concept.
I don't know how that works because I don't run any draws. So like then Barris is sitting in my hand alone waiting to get plucked for intrigue.
Your players are just going to, like, if they have something in their hand that is valuable, they won't military. Like, they're not.
I'm fine with
and
that.
And that's a win, too.
And then I flip Wildfire and get like 2 cards out of their hand, and I'm laughing.
Yeah. Agreed.
Mm-hmm. Especially with Quentin in the mix, I am loving playing Wildfire and Martell.
Yeah, like, yeah Martell, like Wildfire is their Quentin. Starter plot.
Yeah,
so I feel like those are like fun tricks, but they're not going to actively win you games. And you need more out of your characters right now than being able to die well.
Man, I still think this is a game of attrition. Yes, the attrition has to account for both income, like gold resource, and draw resource. But I think Bastard Daughters still fit into a phenomenal conjunction of the two.
Yep. And I mean, I'm not saying you're playing like, you know, half your deck is Bastard Daughter-like characters. You've got 2 or 3 of them in your whole deck. And I mean, what are you playing instead? Like House Dane Knights?
Which I can usually win an intrigue with, which does the same thing as Bastard Daughter. Not bad.
Really? You can usually win an intrigue with just a House Dane Knight?
No, not
just. Yeah, who are you playing against? Not Lannister.
Not just, but I usually want to win intrigue with Martell anyway, so like I'm going to win that intrigue.
Right, so with the Bastard Daughter, you're going to win the intrigue anyway like you would, and then also pitch another card if they decide to do a military challenge at you.
Hands aren't that
Bam!
Big. Hands aren't that big, but okay. I'm glad you guys like it.
Well, if hands aren't that big, then you're hurting them even more, unless you're saying they literally have one card in their hand.
So often have just one card in their hand.
Well, yeah. then who cares? Like, at that point, you're just, like, already winning. If they have one card in their hand and you're Martell, I think you're in a pretty good position. Because you're probably going to have some sort of reset, so you can just flip your reset and then kick their ass.
I don't think you're running very modern Martell decks, sir.
Even without a full reset, if you are able to consistently sit on a 5 or 6 card hand versus their 1 or 2, like, I mean, yes, resources, like, as far as gold goes, complicates the metric a little bit. But I think the general hand size thing, the more I play, is coming back around to being like an accurate indicator of where the turn of the game is going.
Now, I want to say, like, not all Martell decks should run Bastard Daughter. I will admit that. I think especially the new breed of, like, First Snow Martell decks, like the Martell Lion that beat me at the Wausau Regional, I don't think that those decks necessarily need Bastard Daughter, because you're right, they're a lot less good if they're coming back to your hand. But I think there are a lot of Martell decks that still like
them. Yeah, the fact that, like, that Martell deck exists, though, means that, like, you probably shouldn't be running a lot of Bastard Daughter, because, like, if you're not playing it, someone else will.
Right, but I don't think that your opponent having First Snow means they're bad. I think if you have First Snow and then half your opponents do as well, that's 2 First Snows in a lot of games, and then I think they start to fall off the radar. But yeah, speaking as someone who's lost to Martell excessively in finals of tournaments, Bastard Daughters are really annoying still.
Maybe. I don't know.
They add up. They add up.
Stop trying to steal Seth's
crown. I think we're just going to have to agree to disagree. Seth is going to come at me for that crown.
Yeah,
I have lost, like, at least 3 tournaments already this year and gotten second place. So
yeah. I mean, you only did it once at Worlds, and he did it, like, 3 times.
Well, to be fair, there was only 1 second edition tournament at Worlds that was official, so...
Fair point.
We'll see.
Too true.
I was not nearly as good at first edition. I was not very good at all at first edition, so...
First edition was a hard game. Whatever. Next card?
Last card. Yeah, and this is my last card, yep. And it's one that I was wrong about, and I think I still continue to be wrong about. So get ready to yell, but trading with the Pintoshi, I do not like.
You're on the bad player.
You think it was overrated?
Yeah, I absolutely hate giving anything to my opponent. I hate it.
It's okay.
And
you're absolutely wrong.
Yeah, as I said, I could still be on the wrong list here, but I didn't like playing with it came out. I played with it. And every time I flip it over, I hate that I'm giving them 3 more gold. And I have a tendency to kind of count, like, okay, what did you marshal this turn that you were not going to be able to because of that gold?
Yeah, but what did you marshal that turn that you wouldn't have been able to without that gold?
Right. Yeah.
It's all a matter of if you marshaled something better than what they marshaled.
Yep.
I understand the math.
It's worth considering both sides.
But I hate feeling like I gave my opponent any kind of boost. And I did when it came out, and I still do. I play with it now. I didn't think I was going to, but I do. But I really look forward to the day I don't have to play it.
I mean, I can understand your trepidation.
Yeah, like, it's the why I think I was right about that card. It's one of my I was right about it cards, because I said that card is going to go in, like, every deck, and it totally does.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I love this card.
It goes in a lot. I think what I would say is that I was wrong about how swingy it would be, I guess.
It's in 80% of the decks right now.
Less bad when it's been played, but I've also, like, never minded when Maya played it.
Oh, then you're not noticing what they're doing.
I mean, when they give me the gold to marshal both Daenerys and Asha in the same turn or what have you, like, turns out I'm okay with that.
Yeah. If they flipped it, and they shouldn't care that you're flipping Daenerys and Asha, because... Yeah, they're probably doing it wrong if you're actually happy to see it. Because when you drop, like when you drop Bob and Mel, you go, oh, well, you got the Nurse Nasha, that's cute. Or when you drop, like, I don't know, Miri and Drogo, which I did the other, like, there's certain combos where, like, you just drop these two beasts that work amazingly well together, and it's just like, it almost doesn't matter, unless your opponent marshals a milk, what you...
I mean, it's nice, but they're trying to do the same sorts of things, and what I've kind of noticed is, you know, a lot of times when I'm facing off against it, that I can do now what I wanted to do with that extra three gold.
So, like, are you not running trading in any, like, of your major tournament decks?
One of them, but, okay, so one... third, I guess. I would say I've got three that are turning worthy one as trade.
Only, you are the only person I know that is true of. Okay.
Yeah, well, Missouri is a weird meta. It always has.
I mean, Greg's running it and everything. It would have been one of Greg's I'm wrong about it cards. Greg loves it. How about you, Patrick? How many of your tournament decks run trading with the Pentoshi?
Probably the same number as yours, because I get, like, all of my decks from you nowadays, Aaron.
Yeah, okay, so every
you gotta build something on your own, Patrick.
That's why you come in second, buddy.
Yeah, true. But no, of the decks that I build myself, it goes in almost all of them. Yeah, unless I'm building like a mini curve kind of deck, it's in every deck. And I think honestly, like, another reason why I really like it is it's honestly, I think, the best comeback plot in this game. Like, if your opponent has enough stuff out that they're going to do whatever they want already, your ability to just actually get a board presence again, even if it gives them even more of a board presence than they already had, is often enough to actually, like, help you come back.
Yeah. It also is, I think, the single most important plot to making Wildfire finally good.
How so?
Just by making people overcommit.
It strongly encourages overcommitting, and in that kind of situation that Patrick was describing, it really, like, really encourages that overcommit. Like, very few players are going to sit on, like, well, you gave me three gold, I'm just going to sit on this extra good character or two and not play them as you try and recover. No, they're going to put their foot on the pedal and try and push to win and, like, crush your board presence, and then you Wildfire gets really good.
Yeah, I've definitely, like, made people go first with trading and then just, like, dropped a Varus and, like, a location and just been like, okay.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, I think it's a really good plot.
I don't think it's a really good plot. I think it's probably the best plot in the game.
I think it's very close with summons for me. But
I'm still right up there with Noble Cause.
Noble Cause is good too.
Yeah, and Miri Mesder.
A quick
that's fair. Sure. Miri's pretty good.
Hence summons. I think that, can we just take a brief moment to say how cool it is that we just listed what we think are the best three plots in the game, and those are the first three plots that FFG are making the alt art plots for their decks.
Good timing.
Yeah, like, those were definitely the three plots that I was having the most trouble finding whenever I'm building a deck. Like, oh man, where's my trading with the Pentoshi? I gotta dig through all these cards, find one that I'm not using, or, like, steal one out of another deck, and now I'm gonna have, like, eight of them, so that'll be pretty cool.
That, maybe throw in calling. That's still pretty high on my list lately.
I like calling, but I run it less.
I like it so much more than trading. It's so much more.
Ooh, you tell, John. Uh-huh. I like this line of reason.
Yeah, well, I play Martell, though, so I'm, like, twisted on what I...
Yeah, a lot of why Martell doesn't like trading is because trading enables you playing really high cost guys. It turns out Martell's really high cost guys kind of suck.
Yeah.
I think of the decks I have built that don't run trading, all of them are Martell. Mm-hmm. I think that probably justifies your dislike of it if you primarily play Martell.
That would come to it. Yeah, that's what we're hearing probably.
Yeah,
I don't like seven cost characters because I don't have any.
We don't talk about him.
Yeah.
He's good, by the way, but whatever.
He's okay.
So
on to Will.
Did John have any cards left, or is it on me?
On to you.
All right. Well, I've actually only got two of my five that have not been chosen so far. The first one is going to be Martell card. That is the long plan. Where, I think we were kind of sort of okay on it, but I don't think we realized well enough the additional support that Martell was going to get to really make the turn after the long plan punch. And so I think we underestimated that, or at least I know I did.
I only like it in Martell line. I don't think it does enough for me if I'm not running Tyrion.
I thought you were going to say I only like it in Martell. And I was going to be like, wait.
I like it in Crossing quite a bit, you know, sets up for that. This has been an awesome first or second turn play for a lot of Martell Crossings I've played against or who are setting up for the next turn, whether that be landing a Viper or just refilling their hand with counting coppers or whatnot. I think it's been really solid for them.
I think the best thing about it is just it's high reserve. Like just opening with an 8 reserve plot is really handy.
Yeah. Like, and the fact that that gold could be spent for an event, say, I don't know, I want to call it Vengeance, or Red Vengeance, but it's a, was it Vengeance for Elia this time around?
Yep.
Just call it Red Vengeance. We know.
Yeah. Or to marshal something the next turn around, I think it is really flexible.
Yep. It's a card that I keep trying to talk myself into, and I have been for what? Like 4 months now. I have not gotten there yet, but I really want it to be good. The real problem with this card, and I've said it a couple different times in different places, is that the initiative is awful. Especially like considering like every other faction loyal slot got 5 or 6 for their initiative, except for one of them.
Barra.
Oh yeah, that's why I didn't know what it was.
Targ.
And Targ, yeah.
Also Targ.
It just upsets me that like Martell got the lowest initiative faction loyal plot when they are the faction that cares the most about initiative.
Try again. The second most about initiative.
But Night's Watch?
Greyjoy.
Greyjoy? Yeah.
Greyjoy has shit that's actually good that doesn't work if you go.
A lot of stuff is just player choice, but Greyjoy literally has more cards that only work when you're first player.
So give them like a 7. They can lose to Greyjoy and beat everything else. But a 3 is really bad on initiative. Yeah.
Well, I mean, a 3 is not too bad if you're opening with it. Because if you think about a lot of the openers, they're, you know, 2s, 1s, 0s. So... Mm-hmm. I think if that card was 4-7-1, I think it might have been too good. Like, it's already a very solid card. And, like, giving it an initiative boost, I don't know. It might not have been too good, but it would have made me a little nervous.
A 4-7-1-8 would be real good. Because it's also not strictly a 4. It's more like a 7 or an 8. It's just kind of distributed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of times players just don't challenge me for various challenges too, which is good, like to get benefit, but you're not getting that like max out gold benefit a lot of times. Like power challenges just get skipped for the first phase, etc.
That's
hey, I don't know if it was the open, but in the Stockholm Martell Crossing, the long plan was in the deck.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good vote to the confidence of that card.
Sure.
I hear there are some good players in Sweden.
I hear that one in particular is quite notably good.
It's tanked at Kugla.
Yeah.
But that might be because it was playing Kugla players. So.
All right. What's your other card, Will?
Okay, my last one that was not previously brought up is actually going to be Trial by Combat. I think we overrated it some, or at least I did myself, and didn't quite account enough for how many of the non-setup cards in most Lannister or Lannister-affiliated decks were already going to be taken up with other events or, say, ambush cards that people want to set on and use the Tyrion gold for. So I really expected Trial for Combat better, but... You know, even with the small council chambers, I don't think the intrigue-only sort of deck is quite there. And the others, are directing their challenge gold elsewhere. So I feel like this one's fallen flat a little bit from what I expected.
I like it in the jumper, and I can't fit it in the jumper, so I don't use it anywhere.
Yeah, I agree. There you go. I definitely overrated it a bit. It almost made my list. It was like my 6th card. I still have hope that there's going to be a really brutal deck that plays it in the not too distant future. But right now I can't fit it in anything.
There you go. Which is so sad because it just seems like Tyrion just lines up so perfect.
Yep.
Heck of a melee card though.
Yes. Masters.
Yep. That's the play.
Yep.
Next card.
That's it.
Is that, Yeah, that's all of mine that hadn't been mentioned on the wrong column.
Oh.
Do we move into the told you so's or the right column?
Can I say the last card that didn't show up anywhere?
Sure.
Sure.
Blood of the Dragon. Like, we all rated that super high, and that just isn't playable right now.
I thought about that. The one opponent that I had play that against me in regionals, it just the lack of income. Gosh, resources are so important in second edition, and that just killed him. He, you know, he knocked off like three of my characters, but just couldn't do anything else.
Yeah, maybe someday when Targ gets a little bit more passive burn. Like, if Targ ever gets something like Forever Burning, that card might be good again.
Or even if they got something crazy that said, like, every time a character got -1 strength, you know, gain a gold or something. Like, really tie it into the burn mechanic itself.
Yeah, something like that. All right. I told you so. Aaron's favorite section of anything. Should we start with Megan?
I'll go last. Go.
Sure. Okay. I'll go first. I think my favorite two cards that I was right about are Condemned. I think everybody rated Condemned really low when it first came out. Really? And I think people, well, not you guys, but like a lot of people. A lot of people were talking about how Condemned was, you know, like one of the weaker of the icon attachments, probably the weakest of the icon attachments. And then as soon as people started playing with it, they were like, oh, nope. It's the best.
I agree. Well, sort of. I don't agree it's the best, but I think it turned out stronger than we expected. A Tainted is still the best, but a Condemned, I think, is solid in second.
I think a Condemned is better than a Tainted. I had a very long discussion with Aaron about this.
Condemned is better.
It depends on what your deck is trying to do. It depends on what you're playing and what your deck is trying to do.
Are you main house Baratheon? In which case, Condemned is better.
Even in main house Martell, I think Condemned is better.
It depends on what your main house Martell is trying to do. Like,
if your main house Martell is running three Tyene, three tiers, maybe.
Yeah, exactly. Is better. Exactly.
Maybe. Definitely.
Even so.
Yeah, Tainted is better.
But then it's a combo card. I mean, Tainted just becomes a combo card.
What's wrong with
combo? I mean, there's nothing wrong with it, but Condemned is always going to be good. You don't need anything else. You don't need any board position. They don't need any specific characters. You just, like, throw out a Condemned. If they have a power icon that can take attachments, you throw on Condemned, and you've got some value. But, like,
you sort of need some board. I mean, Condemned is still not, like, a turn one play most of the time.
It depends what they
play. It can be, but it's also something that's dependent on you already having power in the house if you're just thinking about it as a catch-all play.
If they have a Balon turn one and I have a Condemned in hand, that bad boy's getting Condemned right away. Because it's going to last until they can manage to knock it off. So
Danny.
I mean, so would Imprisoned in that case if you're just comparing that. The two of those straight up.
Right, I agree. But I think that Imprisoned, you know, the military challenge does matter in the early game. But if you can still, like, weather that storm in the late game, power is so much more important.
You know what fucks Imprisoned over super hardcore?
No,
the prominence of Syria.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, I've imprisoned really important characters 4 or 5 times, only to have them drop Syria and you'd be like, okay, now that did literally nothing because they were going to want to give that guy stealth anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of the awkward thing, you know, sidestepping to Syria. Like, all the characters you want to trigger him on all have military over. You just want to give him...
Which I'm totally okay with. I almost never use Syria for granting military icons anymore. It's just always that stealth. So good. I actually, like, I was playing with Landy Dragon one time, and I gave Miri the stealth to get past somebody. And I just didn't even remember that she had a military icon. I was like, man, I'm not going to be able to get through intrigue or power with her. And I'm like, oh, wait, that gives a military icon, too. Cool, I can do that challenge with her. I just, like, have used him for stealth so much, I even forgot that he had that part of his text.
Yeah.
I love you.
Syrio might be the best neutral character. Well, might be. Syrio is the best neutral character in the game.
Yes. I think I can agree with that.
He's real good. I don't know. I've still had a lot of hurt. Dang it.
Yes, you have.
Littlefinger. I have had good luck with Syrio, but I've also had a lot of injury. I don't know. Part of that is just luck of the draw. He keeps coming up right on the turn. I'm like, well, I could use a 5-cost character, and 2 cards sounds great.
So
Every time I play Littlefinger, he's like in my opening hand, and I'm like, ugh.
Yep.
Oh, that's awkward. I keep hitting him on like turn three or four.
Yeah.
I need that little refill.
So My problem with Littlefinger is very roundabout, and I guess you'd have the same problem with Serio, but at least Serio helps prevent it. Like, if I'm going to play an extra five coster, they better have incredible board presence, because five is that sweet spot, and Gregor killing two of your five costers is a night. Serio's just good enough so that I don't especially care. But, like, getting Littlefinger to lose Tyrion or Mel is just really annoying.
And
right, who's up next?
I think I've got my my other one, right?
Wait, are we still doing the same? Your second card, go.
Situation. My second card was Miri Mazdur. Even though I think everybody was in agreement, I was very vocal about Miri, and she's probably my favorite card now. Obviously, I play Lanny Dragon too much. But yeah, I think she's probably my favorite card of possibly of the entire first cycle. I think she's just such a huge, huge card. Yeah. And I love her.
Greg wanted to talk about tricks with Miri. Ways to get her to go off, like when you're in Targ, winning a power challenge with a two cost guy, and then using your own plot your two cost, or like,
which is great,
or obviously the hound trick where hound returns to hand, or Jorah's third token happens before.
Yep. Yep.
But yeah, she's gross, and that poor wording makes her grosser as silly.
I was doing that hound combo to the Brotherhood guys in New York, like. So much they were very annoyed about it. I had a Miri with a Widow's Wail and the Hound, and it was just a nightmare. They were like, "So I have to defend a 13 strength power challenge every turn, or I lose the game."
You know who's really good?
I think that's the thing with her. You just need that one good trigger, and like the game just snowballs from there.
Yeah, yep. Mr. Hota. Is really good with him.
Yeah, just ambushing him in to remove your own character.
Remove your own character, or just like if they defend with just enough.
Yep. And Ariane is also good with her.
Yeah, yeah. That's disgusting.
Condemn takes care of her pretty well.
What?
Condemn?
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, both of them condemned down to tainted, right?
Putting her down to one icon is pretty rough.
Yeah, especially leaving her with just the intrigue, though, assuming you're playing Martell. And she has to be attacking alone. It's a lot harder to do. Just an intrigue icon versus the power challenge.
Or on the flip side, either of those suddenly gives her a lot of punch to break through.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, true also.
Yeah, and those are my two cards. So, Will or John?
John, go ahead and go. We've talked so much, we've made him be kind of quiet.
I'm trying to figure out two other cards I was right about. But we touched both of mine, which is the Four of the People and Condemned, are the two I had down beforehand.
Good choice.
Yeah. And so for Condemned, just like Patrick was right, just go listen to that part of the podcast again.
Rewind a few minutes and listen to it again.
So I'm going to go out of the cycle and just say that I was right about Banner of the Sun not being very good, which was my first thing. I just went on the Iron Link is what I was doing while you guys were talking. And since the last chapter pack, the Banner of the Sun is the second to worst agenda. Just beating out Banner of the Watch, which is not played at all. There's 14 games on the Iron Link right now with Banner of the Watch. And right above that is Banner of the Sun at 44% win percentage and the fifth most number of games. So Banner of the Sun is just not very good, at least based on what's winning. So that might be outside the rules of the game, but my other two cards are gone. So I'll say that again.
All right, Will? Hoping you take one of mine.
Well, I actually only have one left. One of mine, like I said, was the Bone Way, which we've kind of already hit on. My other one is actually, bear with me here, guys, is Vase Dothrak. Yes, you heard that right. It is just as bad. It's not hit the point where it is playable. We need a lot more attachments and a much broader variety to interact with that to really make it okay to be running enough that you have one to use for removal when you need it, let alone are okay with tossing it so that you don't have it yourself. So, Vase Dothrak, We certainly were.
Bad card then, bad card now.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre that it got printed with like zero support for it anywhere in the cycle, too. Like, I don't know what it was supposed to interact with, but there's just nothing at all.
And it came so early. It looked like it was going to set something up.
Yeah.
That first pack for Tark with Merchant Prince and Vase Dothrak, looking back, it's like, why? What even was happening? Like, why didn't we get some, like, Dothraki support? Like, that's what they had for the rest of the cycle.
Yeah.
And it's like, nope, this, like, attachment dude and attachment location.
So weird.
They're seeding, damn it. It's seeding.
Seeding what, Aaron? When's the plant? I see the seed, but nothing's growing.
It's the Targaryen deluxe.
Yeah, right. And then it rotates out.
Which will be the last one.
Yep.
God, that would be so fitting.
There's like a super broken Vice Dothrak deck, like the month before it rotates out.
When you discard an attachment from hand, gain one power.
Yeah.
Perfect. Love it.
So I'm going to do three because no one had any. When Lords of the Crossing was first spoiled, a lot of people thought it was bad. I thought it was good and I was right. So I'm pretty proud of that because I really like that agenda. I think it's generally better than Fealty.
Well, you can read my entire article series about how I feel on that topic if you're curious.
Where could you read that article series?
You can read it on thewhitebook.com, Will.
Nope, no you can't.
Brilliant. It's actually the White Book Podcast.
Podcast.
Or thewhitebook.wm.
All right, there we go. I knew it was one of the two. I took a 50-50 shot.
Hey, we can't read your thoughts on the Lannister section, because I wrote that one.
That's true. Aaron did write the Lannister section, because he's the Lannister guy, but I primarily agree with him.
It's John. Will, crossing thoughts?
I've never played around with it as much as I should have, but that's good. I like the power generation. What I don't like about it is still like feeling like my challenge order is determined by something else than I want it to be. And you can play around that, but I just would rather be able to make the challenges entirely as I please a lot of times. But otherwise, yeah, I mean, it enables a lot of really good things. Like Put to the Sword is never easier than on a third military challenge. And it gives you power. So yeah, that's good.
I think
you heard it here, folks. Power is good.
It's so true.
In fairness, they might have heard it here first. We've been doing this for a long fucking time.
It's true.
That's true.
250 episodes. That's a lot.
Yeah. Jeez.
Jeez Louise.
Sorry. Try not to think about it too much. Because then I think about, man, if I'd been playing games instead of recording and editing this shit, I would have won a world championship by now. As far as Lords goes, I like it. The thing that bugs me is the timing issue and the fact that they were all like, hey, we're gonna fix the timing and the rules in the game, and then we're gonna give you this thing that doesn't fit the timing rules that we just established.
Yeah,
we gave you this awkward passive power game that doesn't really have an initiation point delineated anywhere in the rules, and I'm like, wow, that was fast. I expected it to be at least a year, not two chapter packs. So that's depressing.
I mean, FFG is really good at making the same mistakes over and over again in completely different ways.
So true. So true. So I hope that's honestly in the first FFG. It doesn't take that big of a fix to do it, just a small errata to make it a forced response to winning that third challenge. But I want them to do it so that they can make consistent, strong timing rules.
I mean, but they make consistent, strong rules, and then they're like, let's just make them silly anyway. Because there's no earthly reason for the Hound shit to work, right? Like the Hound Mary shit. Like every bit of logic in my brain goes, yeah, you won the challenge with using two characters. But at resolution,
I understand that better than the Vengeance.
Because you went
bullshit.
When Miri is doing her ability, how many characters are in the challenge?
That's not what her ability says.
It says while she's attacking alone. It says interrupt, when Clayton replied to a chat, let me speak here. I'm gonna read you. I'm gonna go ahead and read you her text all box. Time. To refresh your memory here.
Uh huh. All right, I'm gonna go to the next card because he's taking 3 years.
I'm bringing it up. Hold on, give me a sec. Wait for it.
Lots
Wait
of sex. For it.
We got Miri Mazder. God damn it! All right, go ahead.
The next card is Braun. I said Braun sucks. Braun sucks. Tommy's the only person I know that even still bothers with Braun. Braun's not
Dude,
a good card.
All right, I got it. I
have
found
to
the
admit,
text
Mark played him against me like turn one in our finals game, the regional, and along with trading with Pitoshi, and then set on like six gold to dare me to try and take Braun. Now, you could try to debate whether sitting on six gold instead of playing another character like Tyrion the more practical play, but you know, Braun was a thing. It happened.
I mean, I guess, but then Braun just cost you 7 gold. So you played Braun as a 7 for 5.
Yes, that is definitely what he did.
But like, now you've spent 7 gold on Braun. Congratulations.
I play with Braun. I like Braun.
Yeah, stick with Martell, buddy.
Yeah.
I still dislike Braun.
Like, but
Aaron, I have something to read to you.
No, we're on to the next card. Dear Leonard.
All right. I'm going to read this now because I have to tell Aaron that he's wrong.
We still got 7
when
questions.
Claim
together.
Is applied for a challenge in which Miri Mazder is attacking alone. So when claim is applied, is she attacking alone, Aaron?
I wasn't listening. Sorry, what? Am I still here? Because I can't hear anything.
Oh, good cover.
I didn't
good cover. All
right. So the next card. Last card is
you're not gonna respond, you're just gonna admit that I'm right. I will take your sound.
So I'm sorry, you didn't attack alone, you had to use other sources. So since you didn't attack alone, you can't trigger that reaction.
Can you let me know what the definition of is as an English teacher, Aaron? Because
no,
it doesn't mean was.
To
it
me
means is. So when
someone's turning into Bill Clinton,
is applied. Yeah. She is currently attacking alone. There's nobody else in the challenge, which means it's fine. It doesn't matter what happened in the past. Is this happening right now?
Okay. Enjoy your bad wording. The last card is the Sea Stone Chair, which caused one of the first panics of second edition, where like it was like great, it's gonna be everywhere. We can't ever stop this. And all that card was the very first card where it's like, you know, Lannister really doesn't care about the Sea Stone Chair. And guess what? Lannister really doesn't care about Sea Stone Chair. It's a good card. It's a card you play. But like if your whole strategy is to get off a bunch of Sea Stone Chair, you're probably gonna lose more games than you win.
Man, I still think it's one. If you get that good trigger of it, the things kinda snowball.
Yeah, but there's more ways. I feel like there's more ways to stop it than there are to stop Miri.
Really? I mean, man, I think Miri is easier to stop. It's the one card you have to control, and that's it.
I mean, like, because you can control Balon or the Sea Stone Chair and usually be fine.
You probably ought to throw off.
Do you? Like, maybe, it's just a stealth. I usually have more than one or two military icons. I'm usually sitting on at least 3 or 4 military icons. So you could try and stealth mask all of them, but you're probably not.
Someone is not working hard enough at removing your board.
I mean, I guess not.
I mean, to be fair, he only plays Lannister, and they have like 6 military icons with ambush.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
which really does help. Burnmen are, by the way, which don't fit into this discussion, but Burnmen are one of the best cards in the game right now.
Yep. I think if we were doing the banter behind the throne style dream team at each cost slot, Burnmen would be pretty up there for the 2 cost slot.
Off the top of my head, maybe Bran. I'm not sure if there's another better 2 coster.
Jorah's still pretty good.
I like them better than Jorah.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, they're like, definitely close. First Nomi, they met a whole other level and they were good to begin with. Okay, so that's that list. We ready to move on to the next section?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, and now 7 review questions for the 7 kingdoms. First, what house has remained most similar from the core set through the first cycle?
What order are we going in here?
Same order. We'll go Patrick, John, Wilmy.
Sure. What houses remained the most similar? Wow. I'm probably going to go with Night's Watch. Hmm. They were trying to defend the wall before any chapter packs were released, and they're still trying to defend the wall, and they still can't do it very well. So,
oh,
they did sorry, Joe.
They did a great right before first snow.
They did. They were like just barely there, and then winter came, ironically, and just took it all away from them.
John, is this main faction?
Yeah.
Targaryen, Dracarys, and kill stuff, and
Daenerys, Dracarys win the game.
It's added Miri to it, but everything else is like the four set card.
Definitely. Will.
I think mine's actually going to be Baratheon. It's still a lot of play some R'hllor's, kneel stuff with Mel triggers, go to town with Robert. Yeah, they got a couple new tools to supplement that, but the game plan is still the same and still strong.
Yeah, Baratheon was my answer too. I feel like Baratheon hasn't really changed anything they do. They got some more cards that do the exact same thing. They push kneel and dominance further.
Sure enough.
Yep.
Okay. So the next question should be fairly obvious. Which house has changed the most from the core during the first cycle?
It's got to be Martell. I mean, Martell in the core was like either a Viper Rush situation or like Sam's Worlds deck. And now there's just like a ton of directions with Martell. It got Icon Control and like Martell Lion first snow stuff. So it's got to be Martell.
Yeah, I think I agree with that one. I agree.
Will?
Yeah. I've got to say that I agree on Martell. I think they've been the house that has broadened the most and gotten the pieces the fastest that we needed to fill in the holes that they had in the core set.
So I was going to say Martell, but I figured everyone would say Martell. So I'm going to cheat and include a deluxe box and say Stark, because in the core set, they were just general stuff. And now they have like a developed Direwolf theme. They have Rush builds. They have Tully builds. Like, they've changed an awful lot. Like, and fewer of their core cards, I think, are good than anyone else.
I think I could get there. I don't know. I'm not a big fan of a ton of them. Some are, like, respectable. None.
Gaston.
I think that...
Well, sorry. Aside from Gaston, to a lesser...
Yeah, I think the Stark core cards not being as good is definitely a symptom of getting new versions of the same cards. Like, you know, having new Sansa makes old Sansa worse, despite the fact that she was really good. She's now kind of meh because you have a better Sansa potentially, and same with Eddard. So,
okay. What major faction identity was fleshed out by the first cycle that wasn't, like, it was there in the core set, but it wasn't really? And what, like, identity was pushed forward? I can go first for this one because you guys are going to, I mean, like, you should probably have time to think, and I already thought about these because I wrote them.
Sure.
I think Greyjoy had a faction identity that was pushed forward an awful lot. Like, they really want to win unopposed, but besides some stealth and Balon, like, they had no real way to do that. And they got the attachment, which is name I need help with.
Fishing net.
They got the location.
Raiding Longship.
Mm-hmm. And then they got some initiative boosts. So everything really fleshed out that unopposed theme. And Seastone Chair is something to actually, like, help want that unopposed, along with you don't need unopposed, but support of the people really benefits from that too. So all of that stuff really goes together and combines to give Greyjoy almost too strong of an identity, but one very, very strong identity.
I guess I'll have to say, I mean, probably Martell icon removal. They had like two core set cards that removed icons, and, you know, Kaelayat's pretty good, but Confinement I was always kind of like meh about, and they got a ton of really great icon removing stuff, and so having a deck built around that is definitely more feasible now.
I'm with Patrick. I think Martell got their themes built on the most, and part of that might be coming from first edition and my expectations, but I think they got the biggest kind of breadth to kind of push things from where they were in the core set versus Greyjoy, for instance, like you said, Aaron. I feel like really had not only like a solid basis of that stuff,
well, but it's not what faction identity was created. But the question isn't what faction identity was created in the first cycle, is what was fleshed out. What was there in the core set in enough to be like existent? Because Martell had one icon removal card in the core set.
Yeah, okay. That's which is why I think they had theirs really fleshed out compared to Greyjoy.
I mean,
I think I get what you're asking, Aaron. Like, what could you have built the deck with in the core box?
Yeah,
but now you build a deck and it's way better.
Yeah, that works. So
I guess maybe like Lanny jumper stuff.
That's what I would have said.
Like, you had a little bit of that in the core with the burn men and the gold cloaks, but then they got the hound and I never bet against my family and all that jazz. So.
And first snow. First snow is the big part of that. Yep.
First snow's so good. I'm very impressed that we made it through all this without talking about first snow much.
I think we spent like 3 hours talking about it the week it came out, so I'm fine with not talking about it anymore.
That's true.
Okay. Anyone else have anything to add to that question?
No, I'm good.
Okay. What major faction identity that already exists do you want to see more fleshed out going forward?
Tyrell as a house.
That's not a faction identity. What part of Tyrell? How do you want
Tyrell? That is by definition their identity.
I would take any of the identities for Tyrell. I would like to see Summer Nights maybe more of a thing. I would like to see the Tyrell, like, dump stuff out with Olenna and that kind of thing be more. I'm still salty that the search for a Lady Knight isn't a come into play effect. Like, how overpowered would it have been to have it combo with, like, Queen of Thorns to make her good? But anyway, other than Tyrell in general, I would like to see Night's Watch fleshed out more. I want them to be good so that I can play them. Because, like, deep down on the inside, I can't bring decks to even minor tournaments that are just, like, not good. And so I really want to play Night's Watch, but I need them to be good first.
Anyone else?
Can I say Wild Lake Ambush?
Yeah, that's an awesome answer.
Because I think that looks like so much fun, and it's totally unplayable right now. Except, I guess, someone did something with the Lannister Wildling deck.
Yeah, that was Jeremy. He went undefeated in Swiss and then couldn't stay for the cut. It's a fun deck.
Yeah.
That a little bit. It's a really fun deck.
Yep. But I really look forward to that someday.
Will?
I mean, oddly enough, I think that even connects back to Tyrell, and I think that's one of my main things, is I would just like to see something connect. It's another one where they're getting all the interlacing kind of features and strands, but not the main points to connect, the combo pieces to push it and bring it home. So it's hard for me to nail down which theme that should be, because it could be several of their themes, as long as it's not just more card or resource advantage, because just giving you that without something to spend it on or direct it to is kind of pointless.
Yeah, for sure.
I'm curious what you think. Like, assuming that we're going to have, like, a Renly King somewhere, like, then that will be, like, what do you think, like, they need that card to be, like, put boost on?
6 strength Tricon with Renown, +2 gold, gets +1 strength for each gold in your gold pool. <That's> perfect. Exactly what he should be.
That'd be good.
I think I think, like, he needs to just be a Tricon with Renown, like, with preferably some good amount of strength and, like, a good ability. That would be awesome.
Yeah, they just need
a
good card. Like, a generally, like, something that hits the board that you have to deal with.
Yeah. Aaron, your camera.
Another Renown would help push their kind of rush theme. They're just a weird faction in that half their cards support a rush theme, half support kind of a control theme. Like, a card that did either, heaven forbid, something somehow combined both, that would be great.
So I think what I want to see fleshed out is Dothraki. I feel like we've gotten a fair amount of Dothraki cards and a fair amount of Dothraki support, and I don't like the way any of it works together. I feel like beyond that they all have military icons, they're just cards that happen to have the Dothraki printed on them, and I'd like some more synergy there. Something to really bring it together.
Yeah, I agree with that. I would love to be able to make a Dothraki deck.
Like, it doesn't even have to be the very best thing in the world. It just, I'd really like to be able to, like, have a Dothraki deck and know what it's there for, except winning military challenges. And even things like the Crone of Vast Dothraki, is that what it's called?
Yep.
Like, how does that go at all with any of the other Bravian cards? Like, it's silly.
You None mean Targaryen?
Sorry, yeah, I apparently just don't know house names. It's super frustrating.
Yeah, I agree.
All right. I'm actually going to save number 5 for last. So number 6 is now number 5. What plot was most important in cycle 1?
I think we already said trading with Bentoshi, right?
You agree with that?
Agreed.
First snow is up there too. Both are really impactful.
I think first snow like changed more of deck composition than trade. I think they go hand in hand with what they do in pushing like different characters. But I think first snow pushed everything that way.
Yep.
Will?
No, I think yeah.
Sorry.
I think I'm right on the same page. The first snow does it. First snow of winter, sorry, is close, but sorry, trading with the Pentoshi does it. And I think a solid portion of that is how well it interacts with first snow in giving you the characters, or at least the resources, to purchase the characters that dodge first snow.
Okay. If you could remove Rarata one card from the current pool, what would it be?
Oy. Remove Rarata.
Can I jump on this one?
Go for it, Will.
It's borderline Berlin Bannerata restricted to hell alone. And I decided over the weekend that I have a card that I really want for that. And that is Gregor Clegane. I don't, in just the abstract, think that he's totally broken or overpowered. But I do think that when he triggers the right time, that it is a total negative play experience that is not based on a choice that I have made or a choice that my opponent has made in the course of actual game. Yes, there's some deck construction that goes into it, but in the still fairly limited card pool we have, like, you're kind of shoehorned into certain decisions. And I just don't like that are such a random flip could not matter for five turns in a row, like Greg's game that I bet on when I took my intentional draw, or like the game I did play in, one Gregor trigger the very first time essentially ends the game right there. I do not like that type of variable swing that is completely out of my control or my pure ramp.
So what would you change it to?
I just...
All right, that's fair. Yeah, just get rid of him.
It is remove Rarata, yeah. So yeah.
Sure, fair enough.
Yeah.
I think I would probably Rarata Tyrion to be one gold per trigger.
Fine, I said current card pool. I totally meant first cycle, but sure.
Okay, sure. If we're doing first cycle, ban the Hound.
Yeah.
He's too good with Tyrion. It's just dumb, and he combos with Miri so effectively. Like, if you're building a Lannister or Banner in the Lion deck and you don't put in the Hound, like, I'm questioning your... He's just so powerful.
Mr. Martell?
That's true.
So I don't know if I have a particular card, but I am so... The fact that Martell got zero draw in a full cycle, and which is so far behind every other house now in that aspect of card advantage.
So what would you Rarata to give insight?
You know what? I was just thinking about this. What if Bastard Daughter said, like, I draw a card instead of discard a card at random, I would probably be more inclined to play that.
Interesting.
I'd be okay with that until, I don't know. That seems like a slippery slope, but maybe, yeah.
Just some kind of draw somewhere. Come on. Yeah. You printed a card for Targaryen that says draw three.
Maybe like a... I think I would honestly be okay with, like, giving Tyene insight.
No, not Tyene. Someone else, but not Tyene.
I don't know. I think she's gonna fall off the map quicker than we think.
Yeah, that wouldn't shock me.
I'm going to throw that out there right now. And I think if she had a good, stable keyword like insight, that would keep her in the mix. Although it would probably just remove Doran entirely from, like...
Aren't we okay with that?
Yes. Doran's terrible. It's bad design.
Yeah.
We're doing eight questions, so I just came up with another.
But there are only seven kingdoms, Aaron.
Dang it.
There's eight houses in the game. Shut up.
Plus, I need to start rapping.
We're rapping. So, blah, blah, blah. My Rarata is Miri to work properly.
So, okay, sure. Shut up.
I
sure. What's the next question?
So, yeah. What card seems innocuous now, but becomes super powerful later?
Brandon's Gift.
Really?
No, not really. The card's bad now, and it's still going to be bad. What card is innocuous now, but is going to be really good?
I mean, or good now, but like just becomes, it's a becomes whole other level later.
Way better. Oh my god. You go first. I don't have one for this off the top of my head.
Iron Mines. Iron Mines is good, okay. But like Iron Mines becomes meta-defining very quickly once we get a full reset.
Iron Mines might have been my pick if I was banning a card from the cycle. That really might have been one to just take out.
Just no way. Yeah, I wouldn't be against that either. I just think there's too much goddamn kill in the game. and that necessitates things like Iron Mines. If we get rid of some of the kill, we wouldn't need shit like Iron Mines, and we could have a balanced game. But hey,
maybe Ago. I think we'll get a lot better if Targ keeps getting more summer support. I think he's definitely a card that we're going to see as like a one of in almost every Targ deck.
What's he do? Standard.
I would argue we just need better summer plots, not more summer support in Targaryen.
That also
summer in general.
Well, I mean, we already have that summer harvest spoiled, and that plot is insane. So
close call.
Close call. Also very good.
Close
plot.
Call. Like,
yeah, I think summer is. Summer's going to be pretty good. I mean, Summer Harvest, really good. Close Call, really good. Calm, really good. There'll be some Summer decks.
True, true, true. So what else seems innocent now that gets crazy? Any other answers?
Warden to the West is going to be really good someday. It's good now, but again, once the reset rolls around and having that kind of hand push is strong.
Yep, I agree with that.
Anyone else or want the last question?
Yep, go for the last question.
Last question.
All right. What did the first cycle do particularly well or poorly that you would like to point out?
I think the first cycle did a fantastic job of just getting this game rolling. Like, the core set was honestly my favorite of all of the LCG's core sets. And I've played, you know, four of them, I think. And this core set was my favorite. And this first cycle did a great job of building off of what the core started. We talked about, you know, a lot of factions got fleshed out and had some of their sub-themes made into major themes. And some houses like Martell got completely revamped in a very good way. And I think it was just an excellent kicking off point. And now we have a really solid card pool to build off of for the future. Somebody else? John?
It's tough because there's definitely like a best faction right now, and no one can argue that. But I think overall, a lot more balanced game than we give it credit for a lot of times. And that the first cycle, I think, helped with that a whole lot as well. And that there's still a very good, like, you can win a game with any faction. And you know, it's not going to be your best deck, but it's still like a very balanced game for how early it is and deep in that as well. And the first cycle helped that.
Yeah. Will?
Yeah, I think that's something that the first cycle has really pushed is the depth, particularly with a lot of the new players that we're picking up here in Missouri. They've really been enamored of that depth, challenge depth, bluffing, the plots and the like, and the core set really built on that, I think, even more than a good chunk of first edition. And the first cycle has just continued that out in a way that continues to make the challenge phase and the plot phase feel really fresh to me right now. So I think that's what we've really nailed.
I think the game is in an amazing place right now. I think that if we get Valor, this becomes a Johnny Wright game. Your high-cost characters become almost unplayable. Not because of Valor, but because of Valor plus the sheer amount of kill they've printed. The lack of that hard reset, for whatever reason, made FFG decide that, like, there's a lot of kill and removal in this first cycle. And all that kill and removal plus an on-demand hard reset means that it's going to be very, very hard to justify these high-cost characters going forward. And I'm really concerned about that once we get a little bit further down the line.
Yeah, we'll see. I think it's going to be a delicate road that FFG is going to have to walk.
So.
But honestly, I mean, I think Nate is a fantastic designer. I really love this first cycle in the core, and I haven't been playing FFG games long enough to have lost all hope, so I believe that it's going to be okay.
Valar Dohaeris.
Yep, that
all
indeed.
Men must serve.
Crops and Clops.
Another chapter of the White Book. I don't know where we're going with this one.
I don't know either.
I was going to say, I thought props and slops, but if you want to just close, we can close.
Props and slops works if anybody has anything. I don't know that I actually have anything new.
I want to slop this whole gorilla story and that I have to keep hearing about it.
Yeah.
It was sad. It's a justifiable decision, and we just don't need to talk about it anymore. Please stop posting memes.
Yep.
I think that's very fair. It's terrible all around, but like, I don't know. It's me taking a stand, I suppose, but a human life is worth more than an animal life to me in the end, so.
Yeah, especially if you're not a vegetarian. Right, Roy?
Too true.
Roy hops in the call.
Somewhere the chill just went down Roy's back.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's because he lacks iron from not eating meat.
Oh, ouch. Sick burn. I'm going to edit him in responding to you tomorrow. It's going to be great.
I'm looking forward to hearing that. Props to the Fallout 4 DLC Far Harbor. I've been playing that.
Ooh, I've not gotten to play that yet.
It is super fun. It's definitely like one of Bethesda's best DLCs. I don't know if you played Skyrim, but it's kind of like the Dragonborn DLC from Skyrim. It reminds me.
I've not played Skyrim, but played a lot of Fallout 3, New Vegas, and 4, so I'm eager to give it a shot.
It's also kind of like Point Lookout from Fallout 3. That's probably the best comparison.
Point Lookout was good. It was surprisingly like well-rounded for a DLC, you know?
Yeah. It's definitely a very interesting DLC. Like, there's a lot to do, and I feel like reinvigorated with the game, which is really good.
I had a prop, it just jumped out of my brain. Damn it.
All right. Anybody have anything else?
I don't think I have anything else at the moment. I'm still waiting to see a little more Game of Thrones HBO show that's worth commenting on. So.
John?
Yeah. Slops to myself. Like, there was a major tournament on the West Coast basically every weekend in May, and I made it to none of them. And I'm missing one this Saturday as well, a regional up in Pasadena. So, yeah. Slops to me for not playing cards.
Just the worst.
Yeah.
You know, on the other hand, I would like to prop John for being willing to come join us on the show while we just talk like, over him and around him and generally don't let him hardly participate in the conversation. I mean, so
that's just,
my apologies and props to you.
That's no, just like, drunk Will.
That like, is true.
I like
that
this a lot more. True. The last podcast I was on, it was Dave and Peel and I, and I think Dave was working on like a work project throughout the podcast, and Peel had to leave at one point, like halfway through, and I ended up just talking to my like monologuing about Martell and just rambling for like an hour and a half, and it and it was
love it.
Yeah. So this I nothing against the banter voice, obviously, but this was fun.
Glad you enjoyed it.
Go ahead.
Do it. You got it, Will.
Danger Zone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.